We're going to begin with a Tosfos again on the first page of Maseches Beitzah, so it's on the single sheet. I underlined the Tosfos. So, if you recall, let's just review what we did last time. We read the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that an egg which was born on Yontif, Beis Shammai, an egg laid on Yontov, Beis Shammai said you're permitted to eat it, and Beis Hillel said you're prohibited from eating it. And the Gemara asked, what kind of hen laid the egg? What is the situation? Is it a hen which is normally meant, which was meant to be slaughtered and eaten? Or is it a hen which was meant to lay eggs? If it were a hen that's meant to be slaughtered and eaten, then everybody should agree that it's permitted, because it's food that came out of food. That hen has already been designated as food. And so it's not nolad, it's just something that came off of something that already exists, because it's already a hen that's meant to be eaten. So the egg is seen as an extension of that hen. If it's a hen that's meant to lay eggs, well then everyone should agree that it's prohibited, because that is a new egg that was laid by the hen. So what are they arguing about?
Can I ask you something?
Yeah.
It's never permitted or not permitted?
Only on Yontif.
Okay.
After Yom Tov, it's permitted. Okay. And then they made a distinction. Perhaps Beit Shammai doesn't hold of Muktzah. So perhaps Beit Shammai does not hold of Muktzah, like the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, and therefore maybe it is an egg, a hen that lays eggs, but Beit Shammai just doesn't hold of Muktzah. And that's the difference. So the Gemara then said no, because even one, perhaps we would think that one that holds, perhaps one that holds, that Muktzah, does not hold of Muktzah, still holds of Nolad. Okay? Perhaps there's a distinction between Nolad and the other kinds of Muktzah. Perhaps Nolad is more agreed upon than the other kinds of Muktzah. So that's the Tosfos that we're going to read now. Okay. Kasalka da'atin da'filu man d'sharei b'muktzah b'nolad asar. Perhaps we might think that that there's a distinction between Nolad and the rest of Muktzah. Then Tosfos says, Delo makzi inish, mai dechazile. Aval benolad, lo hava yada meyetmol. What's the difference between nolad and the other kinds of muktzah? The other kinds of muktzah, you can say that perhaps people are ambiguous about it. You know, let's say a pen. Let's say, you know, we normally assume that a pen is some kind of muktzah. It's a davar shemalachta laser. But a pen, you could use it as a bookmark or something like that. So you could say that most people in their mind assume that a pen can be used for multiple things. But nolad is something that just didn't exist before Shabbos or Yontif. So it's even more stringent. You could not have made something that's nolad mukhan. Something that's nolad. Because the egg doesn't exist yet. You have to, everything that you use on Yontif should be ready before Yontif.
Even if you know it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because it might not. Because it might not.
But even so, it's you're not allowed to have something that was created on Yontif or on Shabbos.
It's not just the not knowing.
Yeah, it's the fact that it was created. Okay. So the point is, you could not, you know, we discussed that the opposite of Muktzah is Mukhan. But something that did not exist yet could not, by any definition of Mukhan, it could not have been Mukhan. Okay, it could not have been ready for Shabbos Yontif, because it just didn't exist yet. The Tema. So that, first of all, Tosfos points that out, that Nolad has this difference from the rest of Muktzah. Because the rest of Muktzah, you could say it falls into different categories, perhaps people think they might use it, but Nolad, by definition, nobody thought they were going to use it, it didn't exist yet. The Tema, but they have a question. The Harabi Shimon, the Shari b'muktzah, Shari b'nolad. Rabbi Shimon, who's the one that permits many kinds of muktzah, no lot is one of the kinds of muktzah that he permits. So the distinction the Gemara made perhaps doesn't apply. But the Gemara said that no lot, that people that hold of don't hold of muktzah still hold of no lot. But that's just not true. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of muktzah and also does not hold of no lot.
Meaning Rabbi Shimon permits no lot.
That's right. Shari b'nolad, k'da'abrinan b'shabbos, like we said in Maseches Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ein mesikin b'shivrei kelim, Rabbi Shimon matir. In Maseches Shabbos, Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not supposed to use the broken vessels, and Rabbi Shimon permits it. Afal gav d'havei nolad, even though it's a kind of nolad. For example, you know, let's say you had a something that could not be used, you know, a vase or something, and it breaks, and now you have a shard of ceramic that can be used as something else. Well, in theory, that shard of ceramic didn't exist before Shabbos. It was a vase before Shabbos. So now it's something else. So it's kind of no lot. So here's the distinction. Tosfos makes an important distinction. Yesh lomar, delo dami dehai no lot dehachi, have nolad tfe. You can't compare the shivrei kelim, the broken vessels. This isn't the Kabbalistic broken vessels. This is the real, the regular vessel that breaks. Mm-hmm. You can't compare shivrei kelim to the egg, because the egg is more nolad than the shivrei kelim were. Hacha have nolad tfe. This is more nolad. Shemitchila lohaya ba'olam. Because originally it just never existed in the world. Aval hasam, but there with the broken kli, hakli hayaba olam. The kli was in the world; it existed. Rak shenishbar, but it broke. So now you have a shard of the kli. V'chein mashmanam be'eruvin, and so on and so forth. Chein mashma be'eruvin, maya be'eva, mivla blia. The water that are in the clouds are absorbed, are held by the clouds, and then when it rains, so rain, we discussed that rain is a kind of nolad.
No, we really discussed snow.
Snow and rain are both nolad. Ufrich, kol sheken, dehave nolad v'aser. And somebody in Maseches Eruvin, one opinion said that perhaps rain and snow should not be nolad because it's in the clouds and the clouds come down. So it says. So the Gemara said, no, that's the most kind of nolad, and it's usser. Umay prich, v'dil mahok Rabbi Shimon. Maybe they held like Rabbi Shimon.
What's my prich mean?
What was the contradiction? What was the disagreement?
Let's take this.
Okay. Da Rabbi Shimon matir benolad. Why would they disagree with that? What was the contradiction with the opinions? Let me just point that out. I'm sorry, I have a little bit of a cold, so it's hard. But the first opinion in Eruvin said, water that comes out of the clouds, not muktzah. Or it's just part of the clouds. The next opinion says, no. It is nolad. Because, you know, first there was a cloud, there was no rain, there was a cloud. And now there's rain in the world, or now there's snow in the world. So the Gemara then says, so Tosos now says, how is that a contradiction? Perhaps the first opinion just held like Rabbi Shimon, and the cloud is like the shivrei kelim, right? The cloud is just like the broken vessels. The cloud breaks up into the water. Elavadai haynu taimak the precious, the kevan the blii lohayu klal ba'olam. No, but clearly it's what we explained. That a cloud, since it has within it all of the water, that's considered like it's not yet in the world. And so rain and snow are the bigger, the more stringent kind of muktzah. V'Rabbi Shimon moded ha'inolad asr. And Rabbi Shimon agrees that that kind of really nolad is prohibited. So perhaps there's two degrees of nolad. There's nolad of something that already kind of existed and just, you know, broke off from the vessels, and there's no lot of something that didn't exist at all. So people quote this as a source why you might be permitted to read newspapers on Shabbos. We discussed that newspapers might be no lot. But newspapers, the ink existed and the paper existed. Everything existed. They're just sort of put together. We'll see later on that there's a distinction between Shabbos and Yontif. And it could be that on Yontif you're still not allowed to.
What about dew?
Yeah. What?
I mean, dew. It's the same. There's there's clouds, there's rain, but there's really also moisture in the air. Always.
Right.
And before a rain, there's a lot of moisture in the air.
But I think the moisture isn't an object. It's not. You can't, you know.
Well, that's what dew is. It's when there's a temperature differentiation that it forms. There is that moisture and it does come out. I mean,
right. I guess it's just a moist plant.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I have a question. Rabbi Shimon. First he says he permits mukta and nolad, and then we decided he permits some nolad?
Exactly. Then the Tosfos will say that he only permits some nolad. He doesn't permit all of the nolad.
But do we have any backing for that? Do we have...
Yeah, this Gemara in Eruvin, that where they don't, Tosfos says that from the fact that they don't say, maybe it's just Rabbi Shimon's opinion,
yeah.
It goes to show you that Rabbi Shimon also holds that this kind of nolad is nolad.
When it says that snow and rain are both the more stringent form of mukta, okay, does that mean that, for instance, if you're using rainwater, either to boil or to, you're collecting, you have a rain barrel and you're collecting it and you're using it either to cook or to bathe, okay? Does that mean that you can't use it, you can't use the rain water that collects on Shabbos or Yom Tov for any purpose?
That's correct.
So what do? You can't even water your garden with it. You have to spill it into the ditch?
You don't collect it on Shabbos, Yom Tov.
So you mean I mean, your rain barrel is attached and the water's coming in. You can what? Like, I guess you have a plug at the bottom.
You could use it after Shabbos or Yom Tov.
You can use it after. In other words, that's what I want to know. It collects on Shabbos because that's just the way a rain barrel works.
Yeah.
But you don't use it and then you use it after Shabbos. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, you can't, you that would be the reason, for instance, that would be the consequence of having a forbidden rain or forbidden snow on Yom Tov, because people would use it. I mean, what's the consequence of a forbidden weather forecast? In other words, like, so
what is forbidden weather forecast?
Words, when you say rain or snow are forbidden, what's the consequence?
You can't. The kids can't play in the snow on Shabbos. That's the consequence.
That's
make
it.
A snowball.
You can't make a snowball on Shabbos with snow that fell on Shabbos. If it fell on Friday, it's not nolad. If it fell on Shabbos, then it's nolad.
So for the snow purpose, it's you can't play in it. And for rain falling, you can't use it.
And you really shouldn't clean. I mean, you shouldn't clean your driveway more than what you need to for Shabbos on Shabbos.
You need this.
Oh, thank you.
A class of mommies, you know, you're in trouble.
Thanks.
Go there. So I'm just was wondering, what are the consequences of having it as a forbidden nolad? And you're saying no playing in the snow on Shabbos unless it's old snow.
That's right.
And you can't use rain that collected for any purpose
on Shabbos
or Yom Tov.
That's correct.
So Beitza that we're reading now is Shabbos and Yom Tov?
Well, it's really about Yom Tov, but the Muktzah thing here overlaps with Shabbos.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Let's go on in the Gemara now. The Gemara is now going to quote a suggestion. So now we're back to square one. Because we said, the Gemara first said, that if you hold that muktza is permitted, you still hold that nolad is forbidden. And so now the Gemara wants to know, what kind of hen is it? Because we're back to this idea, if it's a hen that lays eggs, then it's definitely muktza, and it's definitely nolad. And if it's a hen that's meant for eating, then it's not nolad. So what is it? What is Beis Shammai? Why? So what is the difference between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? Why do they disagree? So my ta'amayhu debate Shammai. We're on the first page where I marked in the Gemara, around the middle of the Gemara. My ta'amayhu debate Shammai. What is Beis Shammai's reasoning? Amar Rav Nachman. So now the Gemara is going to give four answers, four possible distinctions between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Today we will learn one of them. Rav Nachman. Amar Rav Nachman, Le'olam betarnegolet ha'omedet legadel beitzim. It's certainly about the hen that lays eggs. And what's the difference? Ve'itlei mukza, itlei nolad, de'letlei mukza, letlei nolad. That's it. And the Gemara was wrong. The earlier Gemara was just wrong. If you hold of mukza, you hold of nolad. And if you don't hold of mukza, you don't hold of nolad. It's not that you certainly hold of nolad, like the Gemara first said. It just flips the Gemara back on its head. It says, no. And Rav Nachman says, no, you could hold of mukza and not hold of nolad. So you could not hold of nolad if you don't hold of mukza.
Right. So they're saying Beis Shammai just doesn't hold of mukza.
At all. Including nolad. And therefore, Beit Shammai k'Rabbi Shimon, uVeit Hillel k'Rabbi Yehuda. If you remember, we discussed that Rabbi Yehuda is stringent about Muktzah, and Rabbi Shimon is lenient about Muktzah. He holds a very, very narrow view of what kind of Muktzah is prohibited. And therefore, it's very simple. Beit Shammai just holds like Rabbi Shimon, his predecessor, and Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And they line up. It works very well. Okay. Set this aside for a second and take the other packet. We're now going to read three Mishnayos about the different opinions regarding Nolad or Muktza. Let's read Mishnah number one. This is the Mishnah of Maseches Shabbos. The other sugyot about muktza are in Kufmem Bet to Kufmem Zion or something like that in Masechet Shabbos. So this is on Kufmem Gimel. Beis Shammai Omrim Ma'avirin Me'al Shulchan Atzamot Uklipin. On your table you have bones left over from the meal and nutshells and everything like that. Beit Shammai says you're allowed to just take them off the table. Beit Hillel Omrim, Mesalek et hatavla kula umena'ara. Beit Hillel says you have to pick up the tray and you have to shake off the tray. What's the difference? Beit Shammai says that the bones and shells themselves, you could touch them, you could pick them up themselves. Beit Hillel says you have to pick up the tray and, you know, shake it off, because the tray itself is not muktzah. But the bones and nutshells, because you have no use for them, they're muktzah.
Mesalek means?
To get rid of.
Dispose of.
Right, that's right, but they're muktzah. They are muktzah.
Are we talking about the platter, or are we talking about, what about the tablecloth?
This is the table. Tablecloth. Yeah, I don't know if they had plates like we have today. They had
whatever
the bones are on. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Okay, look at the Gemara. Look at where it says Gimel Mem for Gemara. Amar Rav Nachman. Anu ein lanu ella beis Shammai k'Rabbi Yehuda u beis Hillel k'Rabbi Shimon.
Ooh, wait.
What does that mean?
That's the opposite.
It's the opposite. Yeah. Rashi explains that. If you look at the Rashi, and I should have underlined it, but it's right there, right next to where we read on the right, where it says Gimel Mem and Rashi for Gemara, right? The right close to where we read. Anu ilanu, ein anu somchem al mishnatenu kmochi. Our Mishnah is incorrect the way it's written. Kmochi shnuya. Ella muchlefet shitato uveit shamay k'Rabbi. Rather, the opinions are reversed. It should be Beis Hillel says you are allowed to remove the bones and the shells, and Beit Shammai says you're not allowed to.
They did that because it was so used to be the other way. In other words, it's so accustomed to having Hillel be the lenient one and the Shammai being the stringent one.
But here it's no. But the way they wrote it is Beit Shammai being the lenient one.
What I'm saying is the reason they did it opposite is because that's how it usually would be.
No, the way it usually would be is the opposite of what's written.
Beit Shammai ke Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda is the strict one.
Yeah, but that's reversing the Mishnah. Rav Nachman reverses what the Mishnah says.
Right. So who's the typo? Rav Nachman?
No, the Mishnah is the typo. Rav Nachman says the Mishnah has a mistake. Rav Nachman says the Mishnah has a mistake and attributes the opinions incorrectly.
Although he knows the other Mishnah about the egg.
That's right. Isn't that wild? So what do you think? Isn't it in our Gemara? They just said that Rav Nachman. That's right. Rav Nachman commented on the other Mishnah, and Rav Nachman said that Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Sorry, that Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Shimon, and that Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Yehuda. And here he says the opposite. Here he says Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Shimon. Here he says the opposite of what he says in Beit Shammai. The same Rav Nachman says here one thing, and there another thing. The exact opposite. The exact inverse of what he says in one place, he says in the other place.
So Rav Nachman is actually saying, though, words that we have in our Mishnah
are incorrect.
That's how right. Often does that happen?
Not very often.
I mean, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting. Okay.
Okay, but why does he say this?
Good question. Okay, so what?
Somebody got to him.
What do you think?
Something happened here.
In Beitza, he says that it's obvious that Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Shimon, and here he says, no, Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Yehuda. He flips it. Okay. Let's go to the next Mishnah.
No, something happened. I want to know what happened.
We'll get there. I want to read these three Mishnayot before we see how the Gemara puts them together. Page B. Or two, whatever. Okay. Kufnun Vavam Adbet. The Mishnah. I circled it. Yeah, Magnitin. Mechatchin etad loin lifnei habeheima. This is one of the Mishnayot from Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. You're allowed to cut up the dloin, the squashes, the gourds, the pumpkins.
Kalabas.
Okay. Lifnei habehema, for your animal. And a dead animal for your dogs. Now, this is an animal that died on Shabbos. You're allowed to cut up the animal that died on Shabbos for your dogs.
When do you cut it up? When are you allowed to cut it up?
On Shabbos.
Because who's saying that?
The Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im lo haita neveila me'erev Shabbat, Asura. Rabbi Yehuda is stricter, as we know, and says that unless the animal died before Shabbos, you're not allowed to cut it up for your dog. Only if the animal died before Shabbos is it considered muchan.
How do we know that the other opinion is Rabbi Shimon, though? There's no mention of Rabbi Shimon.
No, there's no mention, you're right. But he's the one that's been disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda throughout the Mishnayos.
So what does it mean about the squashes and the gourds?
Yeah,
you
say,
designated
so
that squash before Shabbos?
No, it's a gourd. You have to feed your animal.
You have to feed your animal.
But the question here is about everybody agrees about the squashes and gourds. Nobody's disagreeing. But the animal, and did an animal, if an animal died on Shabbos, is that now nolad or not nolad?
So the animal that dies on Shabbos, that's great.
So the Gemara later explains, the Gemara says that this is referring to an animal that you meant to shecht anyway, because that therefore it's at least mukhan to be food. They don't want you thinking about, was it my pet animal that died and I'm feeding it to my dog? Well, it's an animal that was meant to die anyway. Right. It's an animal that was meant to be eaten anyway. So it was certainly designated to be food, but it was not designated to be food for your animal.
Right.
And certainly not as an avela. So the question is, Are you allowed to feed that to your animal, to use it? Now, what's important here to note is that there's a general principle that if we have a Stam Mishnah and then a Machloket, who do we paskin like? The Stam Mishnah. If a Mishnah is not attributed to anyone, and there's a Machloket presented at the Mishnah, we paskin like the Mishnah. Because we assume That, you'll see in a moment. It'll be an interesting Rashi in our Gemara. But in general, we paskin like the Stam Mishnah.
What's the thinking behind that?
You'll see in a moment. We'll read in the Gemara. The thinking is that if no name is attributed, then it was the majority opinion, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is the one that disagrees. Only Rabbi Yehuda disagreed, but everybody else said this. We're recording Rabbi Yehuda's opinion for posterity, but really the general consensus was the first opinion. Mm-hmm.
And we're not. Are we going to find out? Am I holding out my suspense for why he switched?
Yeah, you're going to see in a moment.
Okay, just check.
Our Gemara discusses, you know, answers these questions. So which way do we paskin? Are we makil or are we machmir in this case? Are you allowed? How do we paskin? Are you allowed to feed your animals or you're not? You are, because that's the Stam Mishnah, right? Mm-hmm. You are allowed to feed your animals an animal that died on Shabbos. Okay, turn to the next page.
Okay, to feed them. All right.
This is now a Mishnah in Maseches Beitza. Remember that Maseches Shabbos is about Shabbos, Maseches Beitza is about Yom Tov. Ein mevak'in eitzim. You're not allowed to chop firewood on Yontif. Lo minakorot velo minakorash nishbira b'yom tov. Not from your doorposts, and not from a beam, or a beam that broke on Yontif. So you're not allowed to take your beam from your house and chop it up into firewood. And even if that beam broke on Yontif, you're not allowed to use it for firewood. Because that would be no lot. Firewood didn't exist, it was a beam before, now it's, you know. Even though, that beam has no other use now. It has no use on Yontif, you're not allowed to chop it up into firewood.
So you can use it afterwards?
Yeah, afterwards. Okay. There's a very important principle that malacha and all of those things are only prohibited on Shabbos and Yontif. There are a few things where there's a knas, where the rabbi said that after Shabbos and Yontif, you're not allowed to do it. So for example, if you cooked something on Shabbos, you're not allowed to eat it after Shabbos either. But that's a knas. That's a rabbinic prohibition. Deoraita, you'd be allowed to eat, if you baked a cake on Shabbos. Biblically, you'd be allowed to eat it on Sunday.
Why can't you?
What?
But you can't bake on Shabbos.
You can't.
So you mean if you do something asur, it's asur on Shabbat, and it's also asur always.
Yes, that's right.
In other words, throw it in the garbage.
The Rabbanan.
It makes sense to put a pot on the fire all Shabbos for it to cook like 24 hours.
No, you put before, but if you accidentally baked a cake on Shabbos, you woke up Saturday morning. I'm just telling you what happened. You didn't know it was Shabbos. No, you looked at the calendar. You thought it was Monday. You woke up.
Oh, my goodness. If that happens, you'll be...
One second.
It doesn't fall into one of the categories of the Avmalachos, though, and you can't do it anyway.
I was going to say that because that's the hugest problem in the Chumash. When you have the guy who's cutting wood on Shabbos, he's like the worst. And he's the one who's... he sets everybody on fire.
This is on Yom Tov. And on Yom Tov, you're allowed to... These things aren't booked. You're allowed to start have fires on Yom Tov.
You need it for your cooking.
You need it.
Shesh is different than chopping.
It's collecting. It's gathering.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So, but even the Mekoshesh Eitzim was like, oh my God! And they dragged him before Moshe, and of course, then we have the whole story.
That was on Shabbos, not on Yontif, when the food is allowed.
So
your candle's not muktzah on Yontif. You have to get your candle.
I know you're going to use the wood for fire, but in theory, you should have to collect it before you
collect it. But now you have these broken beams, and you could they're not. You can't.
They weren't designated.
Let's say you have broken beams, and you don't have to chop it up.
Okay.
But you still can't use them as firewood. So what are we paskin here? Are we machmir or are we makil here? There's no other opinion quoted.
Machmir.
So which one is it? Are we mate? Is the nevela on Shabbos? We say in the end that it was permitted. You're allowed to feed it to your dogs. Here we say that it's prohibited. So it seems to be that it's not clear. Our final opinion with regards to Nolad. So now, with those Mishnayot in mind, let's look back at Rav Nachman in our Gemara.
Okay.
The Gemara now asks, "Umi Amar." So
we're
let's Let's just go to the beginning again. My ta'amayu de Beit Shammai. What's Beit Shammai's opinion? Amar of Nachman, la'olam betarnagolat ha'omedet le'gadil beitzim. The Mishnah is about a hen that's going to lay eggs. V'de'idle muktza, idle nolad, le'idle muktza, le'idle nolad. And if you hold of muktza, you hold of nolad. You don't hold of muktza, you don't hold of nolad. Beit Shammai ke Rabbi Shimon, and Beit Shammai doesn't hold of muktza, like Rabbi Shimon. And Beit Hillel holds of muktza, like Rabbi Yehuda. Says the Gemara. That's a Tosfos. That's not in the Gemara.
I see. Okay. So would we carry that through to Beit Shammai also, according to what Rav Nachman?
Sure, we would.
Wait, so v'delit lay, so you're saying that means?
Does not hold of. Mm-hmm. Itle means yeshlo. Leitle means ainlo. Yeshlo muktza, yeshlo nolad. Ainlo muktza, ainlo nolad. Ainlo meaning in his concepts of halacha. Does not exist. Nolad. Exactly.
Concept.
Does not hold from the concept of nolad. Okay. Umiyama Rav Nachman Hachi? Did Rav Nachman really say that Beit Shammai holds like Rabbi Shimon and Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Yehuda? We all know that he didn't say that. We all know that he said the opposite in our Gemara that we read a few minutes ago. V'hatanan. We have in a Mishnah, contradicting Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim, Magbihin Me'al HaShulchan HaTzamotu Klipin. Beit Hillel Omrim Mesaleket Tavla Kulo Minara. We read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that Beit Shammai says you're allowed to remove the bones and the shells. And Beit Hillel says you have to shake off the tablecloth. V'amar of Nachman, Anu Ein Lenu Ela Beit Shammai K'Rabbi Yehuda, U'Beit Hillel K'Rabbi Shimon. Sandra's question.
What?
How could Rav Nachman switch his opinion? Amar Lach Rav Nachman. I'll tell you what he's going to say. Rav Nachman is going to say that here in the Gemara we're talking about Yom Tov, and that Gemara was talking about Shabbos. And that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai held different opinions with regards to Shabbos and with regards to Yom Tov.
About Muktzah.
About Muktzah specifically. Amar Lach Rav Nachman, Gabe Shabbat, regarding Shabbat, De Satam Lan Tana, Ke Rebbe Shimon, where the Tana, Satam, means told, held, or Stam Tana, it's really Satam, it's Satam Lan Tana. The Tana sealed the Mishnah, as Rebbe Shimon. The Tanan, Mechatchin Tadlo In, Lefnei Beheima, Vetanevela, Lefnei Klavim. You're allowed to cut up the gourds for your animals and the dead and the nevela for your dogs. You're allowed to. And that was the Stam Mishnah. That was the sealed Mishnah without any name attributed. We hold like that. Mukim la ke Beit Hillel. Mukim la Beit Hillel ke Rabbi Shimon. For that, Rav Nachman says that Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Shimon. To go back all the generations. Rav Nachman says that Beit Hillel holds like Rabbi Shimon. Make all about muktza with regards to Shabbos.
But everybody holds the same on that. There's no disagreement.
On the gourds, but not on the nevela.
Oh, okay.
So this is Beit Hillel says okay to both.
On Shabbos.
On Shabbos.
Aval. Flip the page. Gabe Yom Tov. The Satam Lantana Karabi Yehuda. But with regards to Yom Tov, the Mishnah was sealed with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Ditnan ein mevakim eitzim min hakorot velo min hakorash hanishbara b'yom tov. That's the Mishnah we just read about using your beams as firewood. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to use broken beams or beams that break on Yontif as firewood on Yontif. Mukim la lebeit Hillel k'Rabbi Yehuda. In that case, Beis Hillel held like Rabbi Yehuda. So Beis Hillel has two different opinions. Beis Hillel on Shabbos holds like Rabbi Shimon, according to Rav Nachman. This is all according to Rav Nachman. According to Rav Nachman, Beis Hillel is makil about muktza on Shabbos, and he holds like Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos, but he's machmir about muktza on Yom Tov, and he holds like Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov.
It in itself is strange.
Why do you think they're Mekel on Shabbos and Machmir on Yom Tov? Remember, is Muktzah Deoraita or Derabanan? Derabanan. The rabbis invented Muktzah. Why did the rabbis invent Muktzah? You remember, there's a first shiur we gave on Muktzah. Why did the rabbis invent Muktzah?
A few reasons. A
couple of reasons. What are some of the reasons?
To make a gather around the Torah.
Okay, creating a fence around the things, lest you know, if you pick up your cell phone, you might use your cell phone. Okay. What's the other reason? The Rambam's big reason. Exactly. Zilzul Shabbos.
Right.
It's not, you know, you should create some, there are people, for example, that never really do malacha. And were it not for muktzah, you could even go to work, you know, on Shabbos in some cases, and never
Shabbos
do malacha.
Special.
To make Shabbos special. So why would they be more machmir on Yom Tov than they would be on Shabbos with muktzah?
Maybe because people are, because there are so many laws about Shabbos, and people are inclined to be more careful on Shabbat to make it more careful. Maybe Yom Tov, because it's
what are you allowed to do on Yom Tov that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos?
Cook. You're allowed to cook.
So it feels more like a weekday already. So the rabbis, because Yom Tov feels more like a weekday, to make sure that you still recognize that it's special, they made Muktzah more stringent. Muktzah is the rabbi's way. The rabbis, you know, the sages' way of making Shabbos and Yom Tov feel special. That's what the Rambam said. The Rambam said there are people that don't have a job. They sit. They're batlanim. They sit on the street all day long. They're Yoshve Kronos. The guys that sit on the street, you know, playing chess all day long, or whatever they do. If you go to the village, you see in Washington Square Park, they're people sit play chess all day long.
But what you mean?
I'm not talking about those guys.
Well, they're either bums or they're millionaires.
Right. So, but there are people that don't have a job. Right. So for them, the only difference on Shabbos and Yom Tov is muktzah. That's the only difference that they have. Okay. So now let's read. Okay, here we go. So now the Gemara asks. We're on the fourth line in the middle. Michdi. Is that so? Says the Gemara. How could Beis Hillel hold like Rabbi Shimon in one case and like Rabbi Yehuda in the other case? We just discussed it. We're less reading the Gemara. We discussed what the Gemara is going to say. We didn't read it inside yet.
No, but are they saying that when you say that's the question, is that the question of how can they switch sides in general? Or is that a question of, in this case specifically? Is the Gemara asking?
No. In this case.
Okay.
So now the Gemara asks, Man Satme Lematnitin. Who's the one that sealed the Mishnah? Man Satme Lematnitin. Who's the one? Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Rebbe. So now the Gemara asks, My Shna Bishat. Now this is not the same Rabbi Yehuda that's disagreeing with Rabbi Shimon. That's an earlier Rabbi Yehuda. Okay? My Shna Bishabis. The Satam Lan Karabi Shimon, Umay Shnabi Yom Tov, the Satam Lan Karabi Yehuda. Why? So now we asked the question, we said Beit Hillel holds like one in one case and the other in the other case. But really, this is all based on the sealed Mishnah. Why was the Mishnah sealed as Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov and Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos? Amre, Shabbat de Chamira. Velo atila zilzuliba satamla kerabi shimon demekel. Shabbos, which is more stringent in general, and you're not going to come to be mezalzel, to disrespect the Shabbos, they could be more mekel about muktzah. In that case, muktzah wasn't as important. Yom Tov dekil, Yom Tov, where you're allowed to cook and you're allowed to carry, ve'atila zilzulabe, and you might come to disrespect the Yom Tov, Satamlan ke Rabbi Yehuda de Machmir. In that case, we held like Rabbi Yehuda was more stringent. Okay?
It's actually logical.
It makes a lot of sense. This is why there are some who permit reading a newspaper on Shabbos, but not on Yom Tov. Because the kind... You remember that...
That's really fascinating.
That's great.
That's great.
I didn't know that.
That's great.
Shabbos, yes.
So yeah. there are some who say this, and the reason is, if you remember, we discussed that newspaper is a secondary kind of nolad. It's not completely nolad. The ink existed and the paper existed. They were put together. So it's not the more stringent kind of nolad. So it's not the kind of nolad that Rabbi Shimon prohibits. Rabbi Shimon permits a second degree nolad. He only, remember we discussed in the Tosos, Rabbi Shimon only prohibits the more stringent kind of nolad, the first degree nolad. But Rabbi Yehuda prohibits both. And we hold like Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos and Rabbi Yehuda on Yom Tov.
Is there a Yerushalmi on this?
I imagine so. I didn't look.
But you don't, I mean, do they go through this whole?
I'll look for next time. I didn't look at the Yerushalmi. That's a good question. Okay. Let's finish Rabbi. Okay, so far, where we're at is that the Mishnah of an egg that is born, that is hatched on Yom Tov, is a hen that is meant to lay eggs. It's an egg-laying hen. That's her job. And Beit Shammai, what? Right.
It's not really completed, so it makes sense that you'll be able to use it. That's what you say, right?
No, not at all. Beit
Shammai.
Yeah. That's it. No, everybody agrees that the egg is the first degree nolad. The egg did not exist before Shabbos. You're not allowed to eat the egg on Shabbos or on Yom Tov.
Not the egg, but what if there's a chicken coming out of the egg?
Also no.
Also.
Not on Yom Tov. After.
Oh, we're selling, but after.
No, you could wait. You can eat it on Tuesday. Yeah. Just not on Yom Tov. Okay. So it's a hen that's meant to lay eggs. Oh, by the way, it's a very interesting Rashi. Look on the left side of the page, where the Gemara is. Look at where the Gemara begins, parallel to that Rashi. Go three lines down. The Rashi says, "Man satam lan lematnitin, Rebbe." Who's the one that sealed the Mishnah? Rebbe did, right? Rashi's going to tell us something very strange. I don't know what to make of this Rashi. Who sider ha-Mishnah? Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi is the one that compiled the Mishnah. Uchshera'a divrei chacham ve'yeshru be'einav. When he saw an opinion of a rabbi, which he thought was the right opinion, ve'yeshru be'einav, that was correct in his eyes, shina'an stam, v'lo hizkir shem omro. Then he said it without mentioning the name of the rabbi who taught that opinion.
So that changes what you said before about why we take the... That doesn't mean it was a majority necessarily. It just means the Rebbe liked it.
Keep reading. Kedei shelo yehushnuin mepi yachid. So that it won't look to us like only one rabbi said it. V'nerin ke'ilu... Nishnu mipia merubin, the asuk motam. So it'll look to us like it was the majority opinion.
On what basis would Rashi have that opinion?
I don't know. Nobody knows where it is. Rashi basically says that Rebbe is pulling a fast one on us, right? That
it's his opinion.
That it's Rebbe's opinion. It's very strange, Rashi. That it's Rebbe's opinion, and he wanted everybody else to do that. To follow the opinion, so he made it look like it's the majority opinion. Others besides Rashi say that it's the majority, that's the majority opinion. But Rashi says not necessarily the majority opinion, just one opinion. But it was the opinion that Rebbe liked, so he wanted to make it look like it was the majority opinion. So very strange, Rashi.
I'm surprised that that's the language in the Gemara about the Satam, the Mishnah in general, because I don't think that what Rabbi Yehuda did was choose the answer. I think he, unless I misunderstand how he compiled the Mishnah, I think it's more that he chose which Mishnayot or which discussions to put in the Mishnah at all, but the arguments were the arguments.
No, but there are some opinions that are not. What about the opinions that only appear in the Tosefta? They didn't make it into the Mishnah.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. So he chose which opinions to put in, but it's not that he chose who the winner of the contest is, if you know what I'm saying.
That's right, but if he, but he, but he could say, but he could make it look. But according to Rashi, he could at least make it look like one of them was the majority by not mentioning the name of the opinion. What? The Rashi. It's very strange. I don't know where he gets it.
No. Was it double? Why do you have a double? Was he single? What exactly was he single sheet? You took two of them. Single sheet, thank you. Okay. Normally Rashi is here.
But is he also saying that there might have been a majority opinion and he still liked Yaffe better?
Oh, I don't know if that made... I don't imagine... I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine Rashi saying that.
Man is done. Lomanina. Who shuts Rashna? It was Rashi.
To say, because he's the one that compiled the Mishnah, and if you walked in a little bit late, but we read that there were certain Mishnayot that seemed to go according to Rabbi Shimon, and certain Mishnah that went according to Rabbi Yehuda without attributing an opinion. Okay, I want to go to the next part of the Gemara. So now we've understood how Rabbi Nachman says, how Rav Nachman says.
Yes.
The Mishnah works with the egg, a hen that lays eggs.
Solve
okay.
That mystery.
Good. Where were we?
B'mai ukimta. Wait a minute. Are we back in the
Gemara.
Back in the Gemara.
The first word in the line is b'mai.
B'mai.
You see b'mai?
What's ukimta?
Ukimta. What is the case of the Mishnah?
Oh.
Now I was just going to sum up. B'mayu kimta. So now, sof kol sof, Rav Nachman says, "B'tarnegolat ha'omedet l'gadel beitzim." It's about a hen that is meant to lay eggs. That's what we said. That's what Rav Nachman. They're just repeating what Rav Nachman said. If so, says the Gemara, "Ihachi ademiflagei beveitza liflagu b'tarnegolat." If they're disagreeing about the egg, why don't they just disagree about the hen? Hmm. Why don't they just disagree about the hen? Because the same disagreement would exist. Beit Shammai would say that hen is not mukta, and Beit Hillel would say that the hen is mukta. So which came first? Chicken?
Which came first? Oh my God, you planned this. That's good.
He can't make this up. It's here.
It's so good. I love it.
And if the hen died on Shabbat, according to Rabbi Shimon, you could feed it to your dog with the beitza in it?
Presumably, yeah. Sure.
Well, you're not going to tear it up. You're not going to do an autopsy to see if it had an unformed egg in it.
Okay.
You're just assuming that a hen lays one egg a day. But you can't, I mean...
Either way, though, a hen that's meant... They're right. A hen that's meant to lay eggs would certainly be muktzah according to Beit Hillel. Right? A hen that's meant to lay eggs is muktzah. It has no purpose on Shabbos. You can't use the onion. If you can't use the egg, so the hen is muktzah. A hen that's meant to be shechted on Yom Tov is not muktzah. You're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov. But a hen that's meant to lay eggs would be muktzah too. So why does the Mishnah argue about the egg and not argue about the hen? Why not mention the hen?
You're saying if you cannot use the egg, the hen is muktzah.
The hen is also muktzah. Because if
you said you couldn't use the hen, you might still wonder about the egg.
Okay, so let's read. Lahodiyacha kochan to Beit Shammai devenolad shari.
Okay.
1 second. Ad miflagi beveitza liflagu betarnegolet.
Where are you?
Lahodiyacha kochan de Beit Shammai de venolad shari. Meaning the Mishnah should have said it. Said, you see how significant it is when Beit Shammai says that the egg is permitted, that no lad is permitted. Veliflugi v'tarnegolet lo diacha kochan de Beit Hillel de v'muktza asri. So what? So what if it, why not just make it about the hen, and you'll show the strength of Beit Hillel that they prohibited muktzah? Meaning, which one is stronger? Why is it a strength to show that Beit Shammai permitted the nolad? It's also a strength to show Beit Hillel who prohibited muktzah. V'chitema koach dehetera adif. So perhaps we just say the koach dehetera adif. It's stronger to show the more lenient opinion. Now this phrase, I just want to stop here for a second. This phrase is used out of context by a lot of people. Koach dehetera adif means that the lenient opinion is stronger. So when people want to be more lenient, they quote that line. Oh, koach dehetera adif. It's better to be more lenient. But that's not what the line means. It does not mean that it's better to be lenient. What it means is, koach, in this case, well, the phrase is used in other places, but it always means this. Koach dehetera adif means showing the lenient opinion is a stronger thing for the Gemara to do because it shows you more about the issue. If I tell you the stringent opinion, then you don't know anything because you don't know what you don't know where the lines are. So showing the lenient opinion shows you where really they disagree.
It divulges more of the argument.
Right. That's a better way of saying it. It divulges more of the argument.
See, if you just came down straight, then you don't have to explain if you come down strictly. But by showing the leniency, you have to actually tease it out and explain the different variables.
If you right, and our argument can be said in two different ways. One that highlights astringency and one that highlights a leniency. So, for example, I could say that... the egg and the chicken are both either both muktzah, and one is nolad, or I'm trying to think of another example where you could give two different cases: one where you highlight the stringency, and one where you highlight the leniency. But I can't think of one right now. But the point is that they're saying that if they just told you about the hen, right? No, here's what it is. Nolad is a more specific kind of muktzah. So if they just said that the hen is prohibited according to Beit Shammai and permitted according to Beit Hillel and permitted according to Beit Shammai, you know nothing about nolad and you know nothing about people's opinions about nolad. But by making the argument about the egg and showing you that Beit Shammai permits the egg, you can therefore extrapolate based on that and go back up and say, well, if the egg is prohibited according to Beit Hillel, the chicken is too, and if the egg is permitted, then certainly the chicken is also permitted.
What do you mean by chicken being permitted? What are the implications, real-life implications, with the chicken being permitted?
Yeah. It's not muktzah. You can handle the chicken.
Oh, just handle it.
Yeah, yeah,
we're not talking
about
using it.
Yeah, I don't know. What you'd use a live chicken for. You can't. I mean, yeah.
Oh, so you're just saying handling it.
Yeah, handling it.
So basically, you have to leave the chicken coop alone on Shabbos.
On Yom Tov, yeah.
On Yom Tov.
On the egg-laying chickens.
The egg-laying chickens, you leave them alone.
That's right. That's right.
Got it.
So, because it could be that you hold that the hen is muktzah, but that the egg
is a nolad
is not, because you don't hold of that nolad.
Huh. But everybody holds that the egg is nolad. Everybody.
No, Beit Shammai says you're allowed to eat it. Beit Hashanol de Beyom Tov Beit Shammai Matri.
Shammai says yes. So, but I thought you said that the egg is... you're saying even though it's a quality of nolad, everybody agrees it's nolad, but not everybody agrees it's forbidden.
That's right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Not everybody agrees that nolad is forbidden.
Okay.
That's what Rav Nachman is telling us.
Got it.
That's what koach dehetera adif means. Had they argued about the hen, had they said Beit Hillel says the hen is not is usser, and Beit Shammai says the hen is mutter, you would not know whether Beit Shammai permits the egg. But by saying that Beit Shammai permits the egg, you know about the hen as well. That's why koach dehetera adif. It's more... Okay.
Isn't it almost a little bit like a, maybe it's almost a cousin of Kal Vachomer sort of a cousin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
V'niflog b'tshervayhu. Tarnagolo ta'omedet l'gadel beit simhi uveit sata. Beit shamayim ta'achel, beit hilomim lo ta'achel. Why not just have both? The Gemara did not answer that. Why not just have both, then, the Mishnah says? And that's why they bring the next answer, which is the answer of Rabbah, which we'll do next week.
Excellent. Very, very, very fun.
The first two answers are very long. Right.